Perek Mem Aleph. We are holding in the middle of the Perek. I just want to, before we start from where we left off, just say over some points that I came up with that have to do with what we discussed last week. Different things that from last week's share. One of the things is that we discussed last week about how Hashem originally asked different nations if they want to accept the Torah, and each one had their excuse why they don't want it. So there's an interesting pshat brought down from, I believe, from the Mabit in Beis Elikim. I didn't have a chance to look it up, but I believe that he's the one that says this, that he asks, where do Gerim come from? On the one hand, that people that were from other nations that became Jewish, and where do Mumrim come from? A Mumr is a Jewish person who joins a different religion. He changes to a different religion. Where does that come from? He discusses. So Mabit says that it comes from these people by Matan Torah, when Hashem originally offered them if they want to accept the Torah. So he says some of the Goyim actually wanted to take the Torah, but what happened was that they were outnumbered. You know, the rule of majority says that if the majority of the nation doesn't want it, so the nation won't accept it. Even though there were some individuals within that nation, the minority, that did want it. So he says that the people that later joined Kalyus or Gerim are the neshamas of those people that wanted to accept the Torah and they were overruled by the majority. Right. And on the other hand, he says the same thing about Mumrim, Jewish people that went to a different religion, Le'aleinu. So he says what happened to them is that they were from the people that originally, when Hashem offered the Torah to the Jews, they said, no, we don't want it. But they were overruled because the majority of the Jews wanted it. So what happened was that they were forced to accept it, and then later on their neshamas wanted to go away from the Torah. So that's why they converted to other religions, Le'aleinu. But I think it's a little dangerous word to say over, because it sort of justifies it. It justifies a Jewish person saying, "Yo, I don't want to keep this anymore. I'm from the people that didn't hold it." Also, it's Masha from Chazal. We say that like Ish Echad B'Lev Echad, all of Kaisa got together and said, "Nasir Ishma." It doesn't sound like there was anyone who opposed. So it's an interesting point. Another point is. Yeah, I was looking in the Sefer. I don't usually look at the Sefer, but it happened to be that.
What was the Erechrop doing when the mountain was being held over us?
I don't know.
Because they were a lot of
it. Yeah. I was looking at the Sefer this week. I'm in Hagim, who's on the interesting block, and he says a few things that are relevant to some of the discussions for last week. Last week we discussed that when Hashem gave over the Torah, it said we Lashon Shvuah. Hashem said it in Lashon of Shvuah. So we said two explanations. What does it mean, Lashon of Shvuah? Was it that Hashem swore that he's not going to replace Klal Yisrael? Or was it that Klal Yisrael swore that they're not going to replace Hashem? Or not going to replace the Torah? And we also discussed what obligates a Ben Noach to keep his Shvuah, whatever. But the point is that we had two explanations. What does it mean, Lashon Shvuah? Hashem made the Shvuah, or Klal Yisrael made the Shvuah? So Tamiya ben Hagim, he brings down, it says that they're not necessarily mutually exclusive. You could say that there were two shvuahs going on over here. Hashem made a shvuah that they're not going to replace Klal Yisrael, and Klal Yisrael made a shvuah that they're not going to replace the Torah and Hashem. And he says that's the lashon of the Yontif when we celebrate Matan Torah. It's called shvuahs, which could literally be translated as oaths in plural. Why oaths? What are the oaths that were going on? The oath that Klal Yisrael swore to not replace Hashem and the Torah, and the oath that Hashem swore not to replace Klal Yisrael. That's an interesting part. I'm going to get to what we said last week. Another thing we said last week was that Har Sinai, the mountain where the Torah was given, was originally called Har Chariv. We said because it has to do with destruction, because destruction could have came to the world, if not for the fact that Klal Yisrael would accept the Torah, because Hashem originally stipulated with the creation of the world that if they don't accept the Torah, then the world is going to be destroyed. So that's what it was originally called, Chariv. And then afterwards, it was called Sinai, and we said, Hashem Asnet. So we said, why is it called Sinai? It should be called Sneh. So we said that, you know, it's named after it. It's not going to have the exact same name because the name represents the essence of what the thing is, and you can't necessarily have two things that have the exact same essence. Even if the essence of Har Sinai sort of recalls the Sneh, but it's not the exact same thing as the Sneh. So it's not going to have the exact same name. We said such a pshat last week, but I found in the Tami Amir Hagim brings the name of the Yaibitz. And also in the name of the Ashfaidi, an interesting legend that says that Har Sinai was a mountain that was very rocky, a lot of rocks on Har Sinai. And apparently if you would take a rock from Har Sinai and you look at it, there would be a form or a picture of a sneh bush, like a burning bush in each rock. And apparently if you would take a rock and smash it into, cut it in half or smash it into other pieces, each piece would also have a picture of a snare. So they say that, according to this legend, that's why it means that Sinai is called Sinai al-Shasneh, because what does Sinai have to do with snare? Because the rocks of Har Sinai have pictures of a snare on it. It's a very interesting thing. I don't know if we can verify and see. It'd be interesting to see if once we find Har Sinai, figure out where it is, see if we have these rocks. Another thing we mentioned last week was the different names of Har Sinai. So one of the names we said was Har Gavnunim. And we mentioned the Medrash that said that why is Har Sinai called Har Gavnunim? Because it was Naki Kigvina. When Hashem was trying to decide which mountain to give the Torah to Klal Yisrael on, so Hashem decided to give it Dafka on Har Sinai because it was Naki Kigvina. It was clean like cheese. So doesn't mean clean like cheese. So the other mountains were used for Avodah Zarah. People served the mountains or used that to get closer to whatever their idols were. So the other mountains had impurities. On the other hand, Har Sinai was pure from that. It was never used for Avodah Zarah. And that's why the Torah, Hashem Dafka wanted to give the Torah Dafka on Har Sinai, because it was pure like cheese. So it wasn't pure like cheese. So we said that when you make cheese, you take out you separate the curds from the whey. And the curds is the good stuff, and the whey is like the garbagey stuff. And that with that you make cheese. We're not talking about like Gvina Levana, which is only like 5% cheese, and like the rest of it is like some junk, that chemical junk that they put in it. But a real pure cheese. That's what Har Sinai is called Har Gavnunim. I mentioned last week in the name of Poiskim, anonymous Poiskim, I said that they say that that's why we have a minig on Shavuos to eat milchig, dafka cheese, because it recalls this idea that Har Sinai was Naki Kigvina. So last week I said it in the name of anonymous Poiskim. The truth is because I didn't remember who said it. So I just said it over. I didn't have a chance to look at it. And I looked at Tami Amin Hagim, he brings this down in the name of Rav Shimshon Maastropoli, one of the great Mukubalim from the 1600s. Okay. Fine. So these are a few different points that we're going to get to last week, and now we'll start from where we're up to. We're in the middle of Perek Mem Aleph, up to the words Rabbi Pinchas Omer. Rabbi Pinchas said, Erev Shabbos Amdu Yisrael B'Har Sinai Aruchim. Erev Shabbos, he understood that the Torah was given on Erev Shabbos. Oh, he understood that the Torah was given on Shabbos, and now we're talking about like the day before Shabbos, or a few days before Shabbos. The Erev Shabbos, Klal Yisrael was standing at Har Sinai Aruchim, organized, like Shulchan Aruch, a set table. So they were Aruchim, they were organized. What do you mean organized? Hanashim Levad, Vanashim Levad. The men separately and the women separately. There was separate seating by Matan Torah. Hashem said to Moshe, Lech Emor L'Bnei Yisrael, go say to the daughters of Israel, Imroi Tzis L'Kabla Sater, go ask the daughters of Israel if they want to accept the Torah. Why? Why is Hashem telling Moshe Rabbeinu to ask the girls first? So the Medrash says, Shedakam Shel Anashim Hayochim Achar Daiton Shel Nashim, because the way of men is that they go after whatever the opinion of the women is. So that's why Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, first ask the women if they want to be Mekabel Torah, and then ask the men. Shine'emar, as it says in the Pasuk, says, Kais Aymar Leves Yaakov, V'Sogei Levnei Yisrael. Right? Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was introducing to them the idea of the Torah, he said, Kais Aymar Leves Yaakov, so shall you speak to Beis Yaakov. So he said, Elo HaNashim, what does it mean, Beis Yaakov? Those are the women. Bias usually refers to a woman. That's why all the girls' schools are called Beis Yaakov, because it's for women. V'sage l'bnei Yisrael, and speak to Bnei Yisrael. So first it mentions Beis Yaakov, which is the women, and then it says Bnei Yisrael, Eilu ha'anoshim, these are the men. And what was their response? V'olu chulon pe'echod, they all answered with one mouth, meaning they all answered unanimously, and they said, Kol ha'shediba Hashem, nasa v'nishma, everything that Hashem speaks, we're going to do, and we're going to listen. Right? And they said they're going to do it before they said they're going to listen, so they're accepting even if they don't know what it is. Interesting. It's an interesting idea over here that Rabbi Leomi Izmir asked a question. He says, the Medrash says, why did Hashem say to Moshe Rabbeinu, you should ask the girls first, the women first, before you ask the men? So the Medrash said, because the men usually go with whatever the women's opinion is, they just go with that. Right? The more easygoing, let's say. They're less opinionated. But the Lashon is here, Darkam Shal Anoshim Leilich, did the men go with the opinion of the women? It sounds like the men always go with the opinion of the women. If that's true, he has a question. We say that by the Egel HaZohov, by the golden calf, what happened was that the women didn't really want to serve the golden calf, and they were not interested in donating the jewelry in order to serve the golden calf. Yet we find that the men were so adamant in their wanting of to serve the golden calf that they even went and pulled off the jewelry of the women forcibly. We'll speak about it later on in Perkei D'Blez and Perkei Mem Dalet, but that's what Chazal tell us, that the women didn't want to, and Afal Pikein, even so the men still went to go worship the golden calf. But I don't understand, we just said over here that the men go with the opinion of the women. So Rabbi Leo Meizmer says, don't tell me that the answer to this question is that, no, when do we say that the men go with the opinion of the women? That's only if the women have a bad thing, they want to do something bad, so the men will go with that. But if the women want to do something good, and the men want to do something bad, the men will still do something bad, even though the women don't want them to do the bad thing. Meaning, over here, if the women didn't want to accept the Torah, so, which is something bad, so then the men would go after the women and say, oh, we don't want to accept it either. But when the women do want to do something good, meaning by the Egel, where they were saying, no, don't do the Egel, then since the men want to do something bad, they won't listen to the women, they'll do it anyways, and they did the Egel anyways. He said, don't tell me that that's the difference between here and there, because the Medrash doesn't say that the nature of men is to go achar daitan shel nashim for something bad. It doesn't say for something bad. It says it stam. It says achar daitan shel nashim, as if to imply in all cases the nature of men is to go after the opinion of the women. So how do we understand the difference between over here by Matan Torah that the men would be going after the opinion of the women, and over there by the Egel HaZohov, where the men wanted to worship it and women didn't want to worship it. So I think it's a very good question that he asks over here. I say he says an answer. I think it's a little bit of a doichek answer, but Rabbi Leomi Izmir answers that you could say that really the nature of man is to always go with the opinion of the women, like it says over here in the Medrash. But over there, by Egel HaZohav, by the golden calf, it was something unnatural that happened. Hashem, he says that Hashem made it like a miracle, so to speak, that the men went against the opinion of the women to do the Egel HaZohav, because Hashem dafka wanted the story of the Egel HaZohav to happen in order to teach us a lesson that a person can do an Avera and subsequently do tshuva and erase the Avera, like Klal Yisrael did by, or somewhat erase the Avera, but Klal Yisrael did by the Egel HaZohav. That's what Rabbi Leomi Izmir says. It's an interesting point that Hashem made it happen, even though it doesn't work with the natural way of the world. But let's go weiter. For Oymer, it says, so the Medrash brings, this is a little bit difficult to understand over here, but the Medrash brings, so we said that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to ask the women and then ask the men, right? And then they all answered Nasa v'nishma. And now the Medrash is saying another point. For Oymer, it says in the Pasuk, Visharim kecheilim kol mayai poch. It's a Pasuk in Tehillim. It says, Visharim, the men who sing, kecheilim, are like people who play a flute, kol mayai poch. All my springs are through you. What's this pasuk talking about? So, and why is the Medrash bringing this pasuk over here? So, the Mufarshim are sort of, it's very hard to exactly understand what the Kesher is, but the Mufarshim bring down that elsewhere in Chazal, in the Yalkut and Tehillim, and Midrashim on Tehillim, Sheikhar Taif, when on this pasuk in Perek Pei Zayin, in Tehillim, they understand that Visharim, the men who sing, meaning the men who sang by Oz Yashir, by after Kriyas Yamsuf, Kecholalim, were like the women who played the flute, right? They had flute and cymbals. We'll speak about in Perek Mem Beis. But and that's how they went out. So the men who sang were like the women who were playing the flute. So somehow that also tells us over here that by Matan Torah, the men went after the women. But it's a little bit problematic because over there, by Kriyas Yamsuf, the women went after the men, not the men went after the women. So I'm not sure exactly what the Kesher is over here. The Radal also goes with this Derech, I still don't understand it. But then the Radal in the footnote says another pshat, that the Gemara, the Medrash is just trying to is not trying to prove that the men go after the women. The Medrash is just trying to prove that the men and the women by Matan Torah were separate. Because on one hand it's the Shorim, the people who sang, meaning the men. And on the other hand, you have the Cholim, the ones who played the flute, the women, that they were separate by Matan Torah. Still, I don't see exactly where you see that we're talking about Matan Torah. That pasuk L'chor is just talking about Kriyas Yamsuf. So I'm not sure exactly. Fine. Let's go weiter. This is an interesting thing. Rabbi Chachinoy
says,
B'chodesh HaShlishi. The Torah tells us that the Matan Torah happened in the third month. Meaning, if we count from Nisan, so if Nisan year Sivan, Torah is given in the month of Sivan. Now, in the month of Sivan, is in the summer. In the summer, Hayoim Kaful Kalaila, the day is double the night. That's what he says. The day is double the night. No, meaning the day is twice as long as the night. Right? Now, the Radal says that that's obviously not literal, because in order for the day to be twice as long as the night, it would have to mean that the day is 16 hours long and the night is 8 hours long, right? Because 8 plus 16 is 24. But that's never true, at least in our latitude and longitude over here in Eretz Yisrael, in this area, Mitzrayim, and in the Midbar, the day never gets to 16 hours long. And the max is that the day gets to about 14 hours. In the heat of the summer, the day is about 14 hours long. And then the night is 10 hours, 14 and 10. That's the max. But when the Medrash says that the day was twice as long as the night, it doesn't mean literally twice as long. It just means that it was long days. In the summer, the days were long. And what happened was the Jews, they overslept. They slept two hours into the day. Right? Let's say like nowadays, nights is something like, I don't know, a quarter to six, I think, maybe, and a quarter to six in the morning, maybe even early, like 5:30 in the morning or so, and then Shkia now is about 7:30. So if you look at it from without daylight savings, it's, let's say, 4:30 in the morning, really, till 6:30 at night. So that's about 14 hours. The day is about 14 hours long now. A 14-hour long day. And what happened was that the Jews, instead of waking up at 4:30 in the morning, they woke up at 6:30 in the morning. So they slept 2 hours into the day, on the day of Matan Torah. Why? So now the Medrash says something interesting. Why do they sleep? Because Shishnas, there's a few Gersayot over here, but this is the way the our Perek Yedabal Ezer has it. Shishnas Yoim Ba'atzeres Areva, because sleeping during the day on Atzeres, sleeping during the day on Shavuos is Areva, it's sweet. Another Gersa is not that it's Areva, sweet, but it's Aruka, it's long, because it's the long days. But Laila Kotzer, and the nights are short. So it's very Gishmak to sleep during the day in the summer, because, and it's very easy to do it, because the day is so long and the night is so short, so you end up sleeping a little bit extra. The Radal brings that there's a Shir Shirim Rabbah that says that they slept the whole night, But it doesn't say anything about oversleeping into the day. So he says that it sounds like from there that they woke up right away in the day, right when the day happened. But the point is that the Medrash over there was sort of saying that the point was that they slept that night, and they really shouldn't have been sleeping that night, because they should be preparing for the reception of the Torah. So what happened? V'yotza Moshe l'machane Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu came out to the Jewish camp, and he would wake them up from their sleep. Omar lahem, he said to them, Imdu mishnaschem, wake up from your sleep. Kvar bo hechosa no mevakish hezakalo lachnisa luchupo umamtinin lo. The chosan has already arrived and is requesting the kala is asking for the kala to bring her into the chupa, and he's waiting for her. The chosan is waiting. Where are you guys? Kidei liten lames a Torah, to give them the Torah. So Moshe Rabbeinu is giving a mashal to the Klal Yisrael. He's saying the chosan Hashem is waiting for you. You Klal Yisrael, the kala wants to give you the Torah. Where are you? You're sleeping. Wake up! Wake up! Wake up! We want to give you the Torah. So what happened? Bahashushbinin vayitzias akala. Just like the shushbinin, the bridesmaids came and they took out the kala. Ke adam sha'isa shushbinin sachaver, like a man who's they call it the best man or whatever in the Goyish world. So he's like a shushbin, he's like a sort of a helper, a friend of the chosan, his friend. Shneimar vayayitzei Moshe es am the kasser alikim. Moshe brought the nation out to greet Hashem. The chosan yayitzei likas hakala liten hames atoyah, and the chosan came out to greet the kala, to give him the Torah. Shneimar says in the pasuk alikim betzeischol lifnei amecha. Hashem, when you went out in front of your nation. There's a few interesting points to discuss over here. One topic about Klal Yisrael waking up late, and the other topic about the mashal about Klal Yisrael and Hashem receiving the Torah as a mashal of a chasa nikala. So let's start with the first nekuda about Klal Yisrael waking up late. The Morgan of Rome in Hilchos Shavuos Orchaim Simen Tov Tzadik Dalet, in the beginning of the Simen, brings that the minig is that we stay up the whole night on Shavuos night, because the Jew, instead of sleeping, because the Jews ended up sleeping the night of Shavuos when Hashem was going to be give them the Torah, and we need to be misakin that, so we stay up the whole night learning to be misakin that in it. And that's what it's before over here from the Medrash and Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer and other Midrashim, that they slept the whole night. Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer says they even slept 2 hours into the day. And that's why we stay up the whole night on Shavuos, in order to be misakin that aver. That's what the Mogen of Rome says. Rav Chaim Falachi over here in Par Echad, he tells you, go look at the Sefer Moed L'chol Chai, and then the Sefer Ruach Chaim that he wrote, two Sforim from Rav Chaim Falachi. So if you look in those Sforim, he says something very interesting. He brings in the name of one of his ancestors, I forgot the name of the Sefer. He says, some Sforim bring down like this. If you look in Parshas Yisroel, Hashem told Bnei Yisrael, or Hashem told Moshe to tell Bnei Yisrael, "Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, lech al ha'am, go to the nation, v'kidashtom hayom u'machar, and you'll prepare or sanctify today and tomorrow, v'chib susim lo yisom, and you'll wash your clothing. V'hayu nechonim al yom ha'shlishi, and you should be prepared for the yom ha'shlishi, the third day. K'vayom ha'shlishi, on the third day, yerid Hashem le'enechol ha'am al har Sinai." Hashem is going to descend up in the eyes of the whole nation upon Har Sinai. Right, this is the pasuk that's quoted in the beginning of the parak, that this is one of the 10 places where we find that Hashem came down, descended on Har Sinai. Actually, it's a different pasuk, but it's the same idea. That Hashem will descend on Har Sinai. So what does it mean? Hayu nechayim l'yayim ha'shlishi. Prepare yourself for the third day. So the Ibn Ezra says something interesting. Hayu nechayim, be prepared for the third day. Ulai lo yishan adam behem balayla. Maybe what it means that you should be prepared for the third day means that maybe it means that lo yishan adam behem balayla. A person, no one should sleep that night. She yishbu kol Hashem babayker, so that they'll be prepared to listen to the voice of Hashem at the crack of the morning. And he makes a comparison, Kedera Kohen Gadol B'yom HaKippurim, just like a Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, the Mishnah in Masechas Yuma says that the Kohen Gadol would stay up the whole night before doing the Avodah on Yom Kippur. He wouldn't go to sleep. So too, the Ibn Ezra says that when Hashem said, Heyu Nechayim L'yam HaShlishi, that means that they should stay up the whole night in order to prepare for acceptance of the Torah the next morning. That's what it says in Ibn Ezra. So Rav Chaim Palagi brings, I forgot the name of the Sefer, but he says that this Sefer says that from this Ibn Ezra, that's why we stay up the whole night. That's what he says. So Rav Chaim Palagi asks, I don't understand. We did, according to the Midrashim, we didn't stay up the whole night. You want to bring me the source for staying up the whole night in Shavuos from this Ibn Ezra, which says that when Hashem said you should be prepared, that means you should stay up the whole night, and that's why we stay up the whole night for Shavuos. But we didn't stay up. According to the Midrashim, we didn't stay up the whole night on Shavuos. We went to sleep. And Pirkei Avot Blazer says they even slept 2 hours into the day. And the Magen Avraham even says the exact opposite. The Magen Avraham says that the reason why we stay up the whole night is to be misaken this that we slept. He brings from the Mekubalim, the Magen Avraham. So how can you bring a riot from the Ibn Ezra? So I wanted to say that what it means is that it doesn't mean that that we're doing like what Hashem commanded us over there. Hashem said, don't sleep. And they didn't sleep, and we're doing like a zecher for that. That's not what it means. It means Hashem said, don't sleep, and we did sleep. And then we're doing a tikkun exactly like the Magen Avraham said. But Chaim Falaj didn't understand that this mafarshim like that. He was saying that, no, they're saying that it's exactly like what the Ibn Ezra said. That Hashem said, don't sleep, and they didn't sleep, and we're doing a zecher to that. Magen Avraham said, and brings from the Midrashim, that they did sleep, and that's why we do. Then I found that the Radal said, no, you can't say what I'm saying. The Radal in Chaysofas, Oizayin, the Radal said, no, you can't say Chas v'Shalom to say that Hashem would command them to not sleep and they Dafka did sleep. That's what Rav Chaim Falaji is really asking. He's saying, if the Medrash says that they slept, then you can't say that the reason why we stay up is because the Ibn Ezra said that Hashem said don't sleep. Because if Hashem said don't sleep and they slept, you have Chas v'Shalom to say such a thing, that they would go against what Hashem said. So it has to be that there's some sort of machlekes over here.
It's also, according to that shot, it's similar to the spies. Not the spies. The spies. When the spies were sent, wait a minute, when we were told to go up to conquer the land, and we didn't go, and then we met, and we were slaughtered, okay? Was outside of the time. Now this is similar. That shot is similar to that, and it's saying that no, we were told to sleep. Okay, we didn't sleep.
So we were told not to sleep.
We were told not to sleep, and that door didn't sleep. But now we're going. We're asleep. Now we're not sleeping. Okay, but you can't do it. Then we were told.
Right. So I would say what you're saying. That's what I was trying to say. But the problem is that the Radal sort of says like, no, Chas v'Shalom to say such a thing. If Hashem said don't do it, they wouldn't have done it. You're bringing a precedent, you're bringing an interesting point over here. And we find in Parashat Shlach when Hashem said after the story of the Meraglim, don't go fight the, I forgot which nation it was, the Amalek or whatever, don't go fight them.
Amorim?
Yeah. And Hashem said don't go fight them. And they went and they fought them anyway. So we do find that they would go explicitly against what Hashem says. And then they would have to later on be misaken it. Here, you're bringing up an interesting point over here. Okay, another thing. So we said that there's some sort of mashal over here that when they were sleeping, so how did Moshe Rabbeinu wake them up? He said, oh, the chassan is already here. He's waiting for the kala to go bring her into the chuppah to give the Torah to Kala Yisrael. So Moshe Rabbeinu was using some sort of mashal between a chassan of Hashem being like a chassan and Kala Yisrael being like a kala and the Torah and the as if the matan Torah is some sort of chassan happening over here. So what's happening exactly? So There's a lot of different points over here, but the first point is that we've spoken a few times already about this idea that the inyan of chasen and kala is understood to be the chasen is somebody who gives and the kala is someone who receives. We said this idea in different nuschos, but that's the basic idea. The like a zohar and a kevah, giving and receiving. So when we're talking about the relationship between Klal Yisrael and a Kodesh Baruch Hu by Matan Torah, so Kodesh Baruch Hu is obviously the Chosen, because a Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah, Matan Torah, giving of the Torah, and Klal Yisrael accepted the Torah, Kabbalah the Torah. They were like the Kala, they received it. And we find as well that the Torah was sort of what was the mechanism that Hashem used to be mekadesh Klal Yisrael. Just like we find by kiddushin, when a man marries a woman, so you give her a ring, the minig of the from the Goyim times, right, to give her a ring. So too Hashem, who's the chosen, was mekadesh Klal Yisrael by giving him the Torah. Chazal tell us, Torah tziva lanu Moshe Moirash Akilas Yaakov. Al tikri Moirash Torah tziva lanu. Hashem commanded us a Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu gave us the Torah, commanded us the Torah, Moirasha Kihilas Yaakov, an inheritance for the congregations of Jacob. What does it mean, Moirasha? It means an inheritance. Chazal tells us, Al tikri Moirasha ela Moirasa. Don't read it as Moirasha with the dot on the shin on the right side, read it as Moirasa, as if the dot on the shin is on the left side, or with a samach. That Klal Yisrael Moirasa, like a lashon of Erusin, which in modern Hebrew means like an engagement, but in Chazal it means kiddushin. It means it's an early stage of marriage. So the Torah was what Hashem gave to Klal Yisrael to be mekadesh them, just like a chasen is mekadesh the kala with the tabas. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mekadesh Klal Yisrael with the Torah. Chazal also tell us that why did Moshe Rabbeinu break the luchos? So how does the luchos figure into this symbolism? So Chazal tell us, why did Moshe Rabbeinu break the luchos? Because Moshe Rabbeinu thought like was like this. If you have the Chazal tells the Medrash a mashal. If you have a man whose wife was mizana, she committed adultery, right? So the friend of the husband, what he would do is go find her ksuba, destroy her ksuba, and then, you know, you can't really prosecute her. Who says she's married? You don't have any proof that she's married. Where's the ksuba? There's nothing here. Right? So, okay, we know she is, but, you know, if there's no proof, then you can't hold her culpable for it. So to Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem said in the Torah, you know, Anoich Hashem Lekecha, lo yelecha lehim achirim alponai. And what did Klal Yisrael do? They went and they sort of kilu committed adultery from that relationship between Kadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael, and they served the golden calf. And so what did Moshe Rabbeinu do? He took the luchos, which was kilu the ksuba between Klal Yisrael and Kadosh Baruch Hu, the written manifestation of the deal between the Kodesh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael, which is the what a ksuba is for a chasen and kala, a written manifestation of the obligations between the bride and the groom. And Moshe Rabbeinu broke the luchos, as if to say, Moshe Rabbeinu, in the mashal, Moshe Rabbeinu is the friend of the chasen, right? He's breaking the luchos as if to say, like, you know, don't hold them culpable for what they did. They're supposed to keep the Torah. What Torah? There's no. You don't have any proof that they're not supposed to do a vedizor. There's no luchos. We find also the Radal brings from the Tashbitz Katan. Tashbitz Katan was one of the Talmidim of the Rabbi Rutenberg. Not to be confused with the Shalos Teshuvos Tashbitz, who was also a Rishon, who was in Algeria, Sfaradi. But the Tashbitz Katan was Ashkenazi. In Sof Simen Tov Samach Zayin in Tashbitz Katan, he says a very interesting thing. The Tashbitz says, "Nekait haiklola biyoncha." Take this rule in your hand. Kol haminhagim shel chasen v'kala anu lemedim mimatan Torah. All the minhagim, the different customs that we have by chasen and kala, we learn from the giving of the Torah. Shesham hayamara atzvei kechasen neged kala liyisrael. Because there, Kadosh Baruch Hu portrayed himself as a chasen towards the kala. meaning Klal Yisrael was the color, Kodesh Baruch Hu Kibayachal was the chosen, and that's what happened over there by Matan Torah. That's what the Tashbit says. And the Radal doesn't mention this, but the Tashbit brings a few different examples of minhagim that and ideas that have to do with the chasana that sort of are meramis to the Indian of Matan Torah. The first, of course, is that when a man is mekadesh a woman, when you do the kiddushin by the chasana, so you say harem mekadesh asli bazoi or zu kiddos meisha v'yisrael, like the religion of meisha and yisrael. Why do you have to mention kiddos meisha v'yisrael? So the Tashbitz Kotan says that that's a remez to, he brings Hashem his Rebbe, the Maram Rutenberg, that that's a remez to the Indian of Matan Torah. Kedos Meshav Yisrael. He said, in last week we said that Miminoi Eish Dos Lomoi, that the Torah was Eish Dos for Klal Yisrael. So he said, Kedos Meshav Yisrael is referring to Matan Torah. Another thing, he says that the Koilis, we talk about different Koilis, Kol Chosan, Kol Kala, Kol different koilus. So the koilus also has to do with by Matan Torah, saying there were koilus of rokim, and there's also tilim. We say havul Hashem bnei elim, kol Hashem whatever, kol Hashem lamayim, kol Hashem al harim, all these different things. Those koilus also have to do with Matan Torah. Chazal drash in that chapter of Tehillim having to do with Matan Torah. So another interesting thing. It says that if you count in Sheva Brachas, if you count how many times the name of Hashem appears in the Sheva Brachas, that's 14. The name of Hashem appears 14 times in Sheva Brachas. And if you count in the Aseret Dibros, how many times does Hashem's name appear in the Aseret Dibros, it's also 14. So you see there's another connection between the Luchis and the Chasam and Kala. And also, interestingly, the Tashbitz Katan says that just like Klal Yisrael fasted by Matan Torah, so too a chosan fasts on the day that he gets married. Now, this is the first source that I found that says the Klal Yisrael fasted on the day of Matan Torah. We have other reasons that we know Chazal tells why a chosan fasts on the day that he gets married. The place we can discuss it in Hilchas Kiddushin. Is it because the day that you get married is supposed to be a day of Mechil and Kapara? So in order to get Mechil and Kapara, you do Tshuva, and the fasting is a sign of Tshuva? Or is the Vart that if you eat rechishes, that maybe you're drunk and then you're not in the proper frame of mind to do kedushin, and maybe there's a chashash to be mivatel the kedushin. The place can talk about these two reasons and discuss different nafkaminas of those two reasons. But over here, we're saying a third reason. It's because Klal Yisrael fasted on the day of Matan Torah. He says a few other things that by Chosan and Kala we have candles, just like they had. There was a fire by Matan Torah, so too we have candles by Chosan and Kala when they come down to the Chuppah, and other things the Chazal are called. Okay, Bekitzer, the Tashbitz Katan says that in a lot of different places we find that there's a connection between Chosan and Kala and Matan Torah, and other sources also talk about this, but Tashbitz Katan, I think, brings it out the best. Fine, let's go weiter. Rabbi Shua ben Koimer, Rabbi Shua ben Koimer said, Moisha. Moshe Hayu Raglav Amdes Bahar Vukhulay Besech Hashemayim. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he went up to Har Sinai, his feet were standing on the mountain, and the rest of him was in the Shemayim. Okay, what does that mean? The Radal says that this L'chora is ostensibly arguing on what we said last week. We said last week that the mountain was sort of floating in the air, and the top of the mountain went into the Shemayim. But if Moshe Rabbeinu's feet was on the mountain, and the rest of him was in Shemayim, that sounds like the top of the mountain where Moshe Rabbeinu was standing wasn't in the Shemayim. Not like the beginning of the parak that we said that the top of the mountain went into Shemayim. This is maybe Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't standing on the top of the mountain, he was standing wherever he was standing, that part wasn't in Shemayim, and he was up in Shemayim. Okay, interesting. And then it says a marshal. Oh, the Radha also says that the Kavan of the Medrash is not necessarily Kipshuta, it could be that it means like Al Derech Remes, that Moshe Rabbeinu, his feet were on the mountain. Meaning, Chazal tells us that, like, I think from the waist and below, he was like a man, and from the waist above, he was like a malach, Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's what it means. He was standing on the mountain, meaning it was like sort of like in Olam Hazeh, was like a regular person, and the rest of him was in Shemayim, as if he was some higher state of being, like sort of like a malach. But it says Kitendis Shihipusa of Ne'adam Yeshiba, like Besaycha, like a tent which is draped over, and then there's people sitting inside it. And I guess the mashal is that the tent doesn't go all the way down to the ground. It's sort of supported by a stake. So when you're inside the tent, you could say that your feet are in the ground, but they're not necessarily in the tent. But the rest of you is in the tent. So too, Moshe Rabbeinu was, his feet were on the mountain, but the rest of him was in the Shemayim. And Moshe Rabbeinu was looking and gazing upon everything that was in the Shemayim. And Kadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu as a man who speaks to his friend. Shenemar, because it says in the pasuk, V'divra Hashem al Moshe ponim el ponim. Shbaruch Hu spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu face to face. Now, obviously, this doesn't literally mean face to face, because Pashtus HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have a face. So what does it mean Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu like a man speaks to his friend? So Chazal tells us in Mesechus Yevamos that there's two types of Nevi'im. There's Nevi'im that's had a Nevu'ah Bas Baklaria Me'ira, and there's Nevi'im that had a Nevu'ah Bas Baklaria She'ena Me'ira. You can have a Nevu'ah, you can have a vision that's a clear vision, you see exactly what it is, and there's no questions about it. And then there's a Nevu'ah, a type of prophecy that's sort of a little bit murky. It's not so clear exactly what's happening, and you have to use your own interpretation. So Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevu'ah, Darga of Nevu'ah from Kadosh Baruch Hu, Chazal tell us that Shechina medaberes mitoch gronei shel Moshe Rabbeinu. The Shechina spoke from the throat of Moshe Rabbeinu. It was much more direct than other Nevi'im. Nevi'im sort of had like some sort of vision, and then they would try to understand exactly what the vision means, and they would have that's what their Nevu'ah was. The Nevu'ah was more. The Nevu'ah had to do more with their own personal interpretations. Mashenkei Moshe Rabbeinu was directly God speaking to Klal Yisrael. Just Moshe Rabbeinu was the conduit. That's why Chazal tells us Ein Shnei Nevi'im Misnamim B'Signa In Achad. No two Nevi'im will give a Nevu'ah with the exact same style, because each Navi, the style comes from the Navi. The exact words, the exact phrases, how to say it over, that comes from the Navi. By Moshe Rabbeinu, we don't say that. Moshe Rabbeinu comes directly from Hashem. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Lech v'kadesh Yisrael shnei yavim. Go and tell Klal Yisrael to sanctify themselves for 2 days. Shneimar says in the Pasuk, Le'yamer Hashem el Moshe, Lech el Am, v'kidashtom hayom u'bachar. Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, go to the nation and sanctify today and tomorrow. 2 days of preparation. What was the sanctification of Klal Yisrael that they had to do in the Midbar? What do you have to sanctify already? What's the Indian of Kedusha over here? You want to say that they have to give themselves a bris milah?
Shower.
Arle lev, lo yoy b'soichem. They didn't have any arle lev. Other girsa is arelim. The Marzu has a girsa of arelim. Arelim lo yoy b'soichem. They don't have any people who are arelim, uncircumcised. If you're talking about circumcision, that they're already sanctified about that. You want to say sanctify themselves with food that they should eat, you know, the proper food, the holy food or whatever. Man hayu yored lahem min hashamayim. The man was coming to them from Shemayim. So we're not talking about food. Umayim hayu shoshim min haper. They had water coming from the special well. And there was the clouds of glory that were surrounding them. So what does it mean that they have to prepare them, sanctify themselves? Ella al tashmish amito or shelo yishamshu. Rather, it's talking about relations with or ha'afrashim and ishesem shelo yishamshu, that they should separate themselves from their wives. Interestingly, Tanu de Be'eliyo Rabba, it says that Hashem said to them, "Badlu atzmechem me'avera v'gezel v'dover mechor." Separate yourselves from gezel, from stolen things and other disgusting things. What's the preparation according to the Tana of Elio? The preparation is, you know, sort of do tshuva. Get rid of all the things that you stole and other things so that you'll be tahor when you're standing by Har Sinai.
That's tahor. And here
this is Kaddush. Right.
What's the chiluk? Or is there no chiluk?
I don't know.
The same thing.
Just
in a different way.
The Radha brings that the Zayis Rana and Yalkut Shemaini says that what does it mean to sanctify themselves? We're talking about Tumah and Tyra, like Tumah and Tyra. Tumah and Tyra is also like an Indian of Kedusha. But the Radha doesn't like that pshat. He says that because there was no such thing as Tumah and Tyra before Matan Tyra. He says maybe there were people who were makbid on Tumas Keri, but before Matan Tyra there was no such thing as Tumah and Tyra. So we the whole Indian of Tumah V'Tahara is like a gzeres hakadosh of the Kadosh Baruch Mekadosh in the Torah. Before the Torah, there was no such thing. So the Radha wants to say that what it means is that the Kedusha means like a degree of holiness, meaning like seriousness. And when a person is with his wife, so it makes some sort of level of kalas raish, and that's what we're sort of trying to make a person serious. And he goes with that pshat. Moshe done din beno levinatza. Moshe Rabbeinu made a logical argument to himself. Omar Moshe, he said. Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Yelech adam etzel ishtoi v'nimtzu misakven melekabel asatera." A man is going to go to his wife and do what he does with his wife, and it's going to come out that they're not going to be able to be mekabel atera because they only have 2 days of preparation. So what did he do? He added an extra day from himself. So if a man goes to his wife, he'll be already be tar for 2 days. So Moshe Rabbeinu added a third day so that he'll be really tar. What's going on over here is very difficult to understand the Lashon and the Pirkei of Eliezer. The Radha says that it's talking about some sort of tyra. No shaykhus to what we're talking about keri or whatever, tumah v'tahara. It's some sort of inyan of preparing yourselves that you need 3 days. The Gemara talks about a different inyan. The Gemara talks about a musa called peletas. A man who has an emission, so he becomes what's called a bal keri, and then and then he can go, he's tamei for a day, he goes to the mikveh that day, and then by nightfall he's tahar. Right? So a man, the etzem, could be with his wife and then be tahar the next day already. Or if he does it at night, go to the mikveh in the morning, and then he's good. Right? But a woman, there's a chashash that what happens is that the zera that the man put into her would come out, and there's a gzeres hakasov that tells us that a peletas, a woman who has zera come out of her, she becomes tamei. It's called a gzeres hakasov of a peletas. So Chazal tell us that for 3 days, if the zera comes out, then that makes her a peletas. After 3 days, the zera is already dead, and it doesn't do anything. That's what Chazal tells. So the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos says that's why Moshe Rabbeinu wanted dafka 3 days, so that there won't be any problems with this. This is one of the reasons why nowadays in Hilchas Nida a woman has to wait 4 or 5 days before doing a hafsek tayr. It has to do with this inyan of peletas, because peletas also would make it that shivan nakiyim not going to be called nakiyim. You would have to start over again, basically. That's why we wait. Okay, all right, it's more complicated than that, but that's basically what the halachas and halachas need, and the Gemara in Shabbos says that's why Moshe Ben Tafka wanted to do 3 days. But it doesn't sound like that's what was happening over here in the Pirkei Avos, because here it sounds like it's talking about the man not being tamei, and the man having a tyra, but then what's the 3 days? I don't know exactly what's going on over here, but what I do know, and I don't know if this has anything to do with what we're talking about, Bichlal, but it could be that it does. In the Dead Sea Scrolls, Lahavdil, the cult in Qumran that wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls, so in a lot of their scrolls, they write that a man who has an emission is tamei for 3 days. Chazal tell us 1 day. In the Torah, it sounds like 1 day. It doesn't say 3 days, like it says by Azav. Well, Zav is not really. Wait, whatever. The kids are. It doesn't say 3 days. It doesn't say 3 days in the Torah. They understand, these Dead Sea Scroll people understand that a man is tummy for 3 days. So in light of that, could be, if, I don't know, but if maybe there's some sort of machlekes or something in earlier times, and maybe this particular blizzard is going like that, if you understand it like that, it makes a little bit more sense that the men would be tummy for 3 days. I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know if you can apply what it says in the Dead Sea Scrolls to the Midrashim. But
he thought that wasn't going to be proper. That
right.
Meaning that wasn't going to work.
Right.
So he added another day.
Right.
So that it would work.
Right.
Just in case somebody had been to his Eitzar Hara.
Right.
So then over there you still only need 2 days. Over here you still only need 2 days, and he just had to make sure that it was two.
Oh, that's the word. Could be. I'm not sure.
I'm suggesting that.
I'm not sure.
He added it just to be cautious.
To be cautious. Could be.
In case somebody.
The Gemara in Yevamim says that Hashem originally said 2 days, and Moshe Rabbeinu added a third day, and Kodesh Baruch Hu was maskim. So the Gemara in Shabbos. Omer Kodesh Baruch Hu, Hashem said, Moshe, the way I understand this line, also the Mefarshim don't speak about it, but Harbein Nefashis Yisrael Hayu Bayis Ba'isay Alayla. Many souls from Klal Yisrael were supposed to be coming on that day, on that night. The way I understand it was Hashem was telling Moshe Rabbeinu, there were a lot of people that were supposed to be conceived that night. You added a third day, they were supposed to be conceived dafka that night. And by you adding an extra day where they have to be separate, you withheld them from coming into the world. Still, still what you did was good. For Hoydulai Kodesh Baruch Hu, and Kodesh Baruch Hu agreed to Moshe Rabbeinu, Shenamar, it says in the Pasuk, V'yu Nechoinim L'Yom HaShlishi, be prepared for the Nechoinim L'Yom HaShlishi. I think the drasha is like Nechoin, like what you said was Nechoin about the third day. What you said was correct about the third day. The Radal points out that the Gemara actually says a different proof that Kodesh Baruch Hu agreed to Moshe Rabbeinu, because the Gemara says that, and we find that the Shechina didn't come to Har Sinai until the third day. If Kodesh Baruch Hu didn't agree, so it would be 1 day, 2 days preparation, and then the third day Kodesh Baruch Hu would come. But that's not what happened. It was 1 day, 2 days, third day still preparing, and then the next day Kodesh Baruch Hu's Shechina came in and gave the Torah to Klal Yisrael. So that's how you know that Hashem agreed. It didn't make this drushim v'hayu nechayinim. It said that's just the way it happened. Right. Omer Kodesh Baruch Hu yered Moshe el machane. Hashem said that I want that Moshe Rabbeinu should go down to the camp of the Jews, and then I will let the Jews hear the Torah. Why? Why Hashem didn't want Moshe Rabbeinu on the mountain when he was saying over the Torah? Because I didn't want people to say that really it wasn't Hashem speaking, it was Moshe Rabbeinu up on the mountain behind the dark clouds, he was really speaking. And it looked like he made it look like it was coming from Hashem, but he was really the one speaking. So rather, Hashem wanted that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be down with Klal Yisrael, and still there's going to be a voice coming. So it couldn't be from Moshe Rabbeinu. But the problem is that Hashem is not going to tell Moshe Rabbeinu, "Okay, go down, so I can give you a Torah." It's like it's a shtickle bizarre thing. Like Moshe Rabbeinu is up there on the mountain, and Hashem is saying, "Okay, go down." So Hashem sort of did like a trick to get Moshe Rabbeinu to go down in a more covetic way, in order so that he could give the Torah to Klal Yisrael without Moshe Rabbeinu being on the mountain. Omaroi, Hashem said to him, "Raid ha'ed ba'am, go and warn the nation. Go tell Klal Yisrael not to go up on the mountain." That's what Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu. Go down to the camp of Klal Yisrael and tell them not that they're not allowed to go up to the mountain. Moshe Hayu writes a liya isham, but Moshe wanted to stay up on the mountain. So Amalei Kvar Hayadaisibam, I already warned them. I already told Klal Yisrael not to go up the mountain. And that was one of the first things they did when they first came to the mountain. So that didn't get Moshe Rabbeinu to come down. Amalei Kara is El Aaron, go call Aaron. Tell Aaron I want him up also on the mountain. Yored Al Machan Alikrei is Aaron. So Moshe Rabbeinu went down to the camp to call Aaron. And all of a sudden, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hishmael is Torah to Yisrael. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu started speaking the Torah to Klal Yisrael. Shenamar, It says in the pasuk, "Vayomer elav Hashem leich reid." Hashem said to him, "Go down." Vayered Moshe al ha'am. Vayomer aleihem, and Moshe went down to the nation. And he said to them, "What was the next thing?" Maksi basrei. Was the next pasuk right after that? Vayedaber lekim esel rimar ela leimar. Hashem spoke these things, these words, saying, "Anecha Hashem lekecha sher tzisicha," etc. Right after Moshe ben went down, then Hashem started speaking. What time is it?
10:29.
Okay. And we'll go weiter, and then we'll sort of speak about the ideas that come out from this next week. Yotza Kol Rishon, the first voice came out. The first Hashem said the first of the Seres Adibros, Vashemayim Ve'aretz Roshu Mimenu, and the heavens and the earth started shaking from it. Vayamim Ve'hanoharis Borchu, and the rivers and the seas started running. They started flowing backwards. The mountains and the hills were displaced. And all the trees of the world bowed down. That's all these things happened when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said the first words. The Shemayim and the Eretz started shaking and making noise. And the river started flowing backwards, and the mountains were displaced, and all the trees started bowing. And all the people, the dead people that were in their graves, they came back alive and they stood on their feet. All those who are here are. Okay, we'll speak next week about exactly how to darshan it. And all the people that were destined to be created all the way till the end of the end of the generations, they all stood with them at Har Sinai. Shenamar says in the pasuk, "Ve'es asher inenu pai imanu hayom," and that which isn't here yet, those things, people that don't exist yet, imanu hayom, they were standing here with us. And Chazal tell us that all the people, all the gerim that were destined to join Kali Yisrael, they were also there by Matan Torah, and that's brought in Tamei Amin Hagim. It brings down from the Rab Shitzer, the Rebbe Elimelech, my Zayde, the Noam Elimelech, he said about himself, he said, "Not only do I remember Maimed Har Sinai, but I also remember who was standing next to me when I was there. Mamish, everyone was there." V'Yisrael Shehem Chayim Noflu Apanim, and the Jews that were alive, they fell on their faces, Vamesu, and they died. When they heard Hashem say, "Anochi Hashem Lekecha," the Jews fell on their faces and they died. The Kol Sheni, and then the second one of the Seres Adibros came out. Hashem said, "Lo Yelach Alekim Achirim." And they came back to life and they stood on their feet. And they said to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Our master Moshe, we cannot hear the voice of Kadosh Baruch Hu. Umasnu kishem shamasnu. We're gonna die just like we already died. They all died by the Anuch Hashem Lekecha, and then they came back to life, and then they heard Lo Yelach, and they came back to life. Right? And they're gonna say, we don't want to hear Hashem speaking because we're gonna die like we died before, and you never know what's gonna happen." Shneimar says the pasuk, "Nafshi yotzav v'dabroi." My soul left when he spoke. It's really in the Shir, it's talking about the mashal between the two people that are in love with each other. So one was saying that the lady that was saying that when the man speaks, so my soul leaves myself when I hear him speak. She gets like all excited or whatever. And Kadosh Baruch Hu was saying the same thing, that when a Kadosh Baruch Hu speaks to them, their soul leaves them and they die. And the pasuk says, "Vayomer Moshe Dabar Atoy Imanu V'Nishma," and they said to Moshe, "You speak to us and we'll listen. We don't want Hashem to speak to us." V'Shama Kadosh Baruch Hu Kolan Shel Yisrael V'Arav Lein. Kadosh Baruch Hu heard the voice of Klal Yisrael that they said that they want Moshe Rabbeinu to say the Dibros, not Hashem. V'Arav Lein, and it was sweet to him. Kadosh Baruch Hu agreed to Klal Yisrael's request. And then basically we're going to say that Kadosh Baruch Hu arranged that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be the one that says over the rest of the Dibros. So we'll leave off with a few questions over here. Stam. What are these psukim? How do we dash in the psukim of that they came alive? How did these psukim work out exactly? But more importantly, if why is it that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke Anochi Hashem Elokecha, so the people that were dead came back to life and the people that were alive died? What happened over there? Another question. Why is it that when Klal Yisrael said, no, we don't want to hear it from Hashem, we want to hear it from you, Moshe Rabbeinu, why was Hashem okay with that? It's like an affront the king is talking to, and you're like, I don't want to hear it from you, I want to hear it from him. You tell him, and he'll tell me. I don't want to hear it directly from you. Why is that okay?
And the problem with that is because we just also saw Hashem didn't want anyone to go up, because they might have heard it from...
From they'll say the Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah,
that was going to be a problem.
And now there's Dafka saying it. We want to hear Dafka in that way. Why does it work? So we'll discuss some of these questions next week, and then we'll try to finish off the parak as well. And next week, since it's right before Shavuos, so we'll probably have like a little shorter shiur, and we'll work it off. All right, good Shabbos, and thank you for coming.